Welcome to Stopgap Talks, your go-to podcast for expert insights into the marketing, digital, creative, and research recruitment landscape. With over 30 years of experience, our consultants are here to share the wisdom, strategies, and success stories that can transform your hiring or career journey. If you enjoy the episode, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review to help others find us. Now let's dive in to the latest episode of Stopgap Talks.
This is Amanda from Stopgap, and today I'm joined by Grace French from Stand, who are a consultancy agency. And I think I want to hand it straight over to you, Grace, and let you introduce yourself. Maybe you can tell us about where you're from and your background, including some of the things you're doing client-facing yourself.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me, Amanda. It's really great to be here. As you've mentioned, my background's in psychology. So I actually studied psychology at the University of Bath. Originally wanted to be a clinical psychologist, actually. But after 4 years of uni, the thought of doing another few years of study was too much for me. So I wanted to start getting out there and doing stuff. Sure. So I was really looking for a role where I could use my skills and interests in social and behavioural psychology were particular passions of mine. So kind of looking for a career where I could use comms with behaviour change felt like a really good fit for me. Yeah. That ultimately led me to joining Stand. I've been there for 8 years now. Wow. And behaviour change is really at the heart of our approach to internal and external comms. In my current role, I'm lucky to wear a number of different hats. So as a director of the company, I lead our charity, education, social care client work. And that's everything across insight, strategy, PR, digital and social media work. Okay. I'm also our head of culture, so Stan's own culture strategy and program. And then I also work with our clients to interrogate and enhance their own organizational culture, ensuring it's in the best shape it can possibly be for their colleagues, future colleagues and their business.
Wow, that's really great. I mean, I think that's it, right? When your passion drives you, it becomes something that makes you want to put all those hats on, being like, yeah, I could do that. I could do a little bit of that too. So it's lovely to hear. I know that Stand has B Corp status as well. And, you know, your positioning in the marketplace has always been very purpose driven. So it's really nice to see that that culture bit is coming through the whole way through, you know, everything that you guys do. Maybe I'll start off by kind of finding out a little bit about, you know, what does good internal culture actually look like to you? Let's start with that.
Those are the big questions. I love it. It won't surprise you to know that there's no one answer to this. Every organization is different. Every organization has a different goal, different team size and structure, different dynamics. So naturally, there is no one size fits all solution. Mm-hmm. If there was, I think the world would be quite a boring place. Yeah. But when it comes to thinking about and really trying to understand what a good internal culture looks like, there are a few mantras that I will always stand by. The first one is that when it comes to culture, the most dangerous thing you can do is build it based on assumption. Yeah. If you're not listening to your people and listening to what really matters and what drives them and motivates them, you're shooting in the dark and you could end up with something that doesn't resonate with your employees, doesn't connect to what gets them out of bed in the morning. And they'll be thinking, you don't get me, you don't understand me. Mm-hmm. I'm not connected to the vision here. So you really need to do that listening piece. Mm-hmm. Alongside that is making sure that you're connecting your purpose with your colleagues' purpose. Purpose and fulfillment ramped up really dramatically in the pandemic. And has stayed true since then. I think it's one of the few good things to come out of the pandemic, because it, for many workers, it was the first time in their adult life where they could sort of step off that conveyor belt of life and ask themselves, what am I doing? You know, they had that time to pause and reflect and really interrogate what they're spending their time doing and do they care about it? So yeah. I think connecting what drives an individual with what drives the business is absolutely imperative. If your colleagues don't understand why you exist and don't connect with that on a personal level, they won't understand why they're coming to work. And then they're going to start thinking, should I be here?
Yeah, and I think that's a human approach, isn't it? As in, if you know the individuals around you, you respect them, you see that they have struggles, you also see that they have things that they're really good at. And I think having that be part of your culture is a really lovely thing to do. Why not enhance the people around you by supporting them, really?
Exactly. And you've actually touched on my third mantra. I think we're definitely aligned in our thinking that you need to see everyone in your organization as a person, not just an employee. Yeah. Like, for example, at Stand, we don't really tend to use the word employee. We talk about colleagues, we talk about the people that we work with. Because you know, they have lives outside of work, they have pressures, they're amazing, complex, you know, flawed, incredible people. They're not a number on a spreadsheet. And I think if you get into the habit of thinking of them like a number on a spreadsheet, you're going to get yourself into a sticky place quite quickly because they will feel that.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I mean, do you think there's any, like, what intentional steps do you take to build and sustain, you know, it as like your agency would grow or your company would grow? How do you, you know, you've obviously put that in place in the beginning and said, this is who we are, this is what we're trying to achieve. But how, what are those steps kind of look like over time?
Yeah, and it's funny taking quite a nebulous concept of culture and turning it into a set of practical steps.
Yeah.
But there are some, which is hopefully reassuring to anyone who's listening. So what we find works when we did our own culture strategy and when we've worked with our clients on their cultures as well, the first step, as I mentioned earlier, is really doing that listening piece with your team. This is absolutely critical, whatever stage you are in your business journey, but especially as you are growing and evolving. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as you're going through that journey, your structure, your pace, your goals will all be changing naturally. And your people will be changing too, both in terms of the size of your team, the responsibilities that they have, the teams, the divisions, the dynamics.
Yeah.
Some people may leave and some you will bring in more people as well. And that's just something you have to accept. But
yeah.
With that being said, that piece around co-creating the culture is really, really critical. You have to make sure you're building it with them rather than it being something that happens to them. If they're passive receivers of culture, they're not going to get on board. They need to be part of it because it's, you know, it's where we spend a third of our working lives, which is a statistic that will always shock me, even though that is what it is. They need to feel they're a meaningful part of that and that they've got some influence over it.
Yeah.
So that first piece is the listening.
Yeah.
Then once you've done that, the second piece is making sure that your culture is linking not just to what your colleagues are saying, but that it's also mapping really clearly onto your strategy, your vision, mission and values.
Yeah.
Because, you know, let's not forget that culture, yes, is there to support your people, make them feel really valued and listened to. It's there to get the best out of every person and team, but it's also there to make sure the business is achieving the best it possibly can be.
Yeah.
So there's a business reason behind culture as well. So if you over-index on looking after your people at the expense of your business, then it's not fit for purpose because people aren't being inspired to help achieve your vision. They're just coming to work because it's a nice place to be.
Sure.
On the other hand, if you've got a culture that's really connected to your vision and your strategy, but isn't ignoring the very real needs of your people, it's also not fit for purpose because you've got people who aren't feeling heard and valued and they're not going to be motivated to do their best.
Yeah. Or to get involved. As in, put their hands up and say, I'll try that, even though I'm a bit busy. No, I'll give it a go. As in, people who like where they are will probably work harder for you because they love it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, when they're thinking about workplace culture, especially when they've know there's, they need to crack it a bit better, they know there's something that's not quite right, it can feel really challenging to know where to start because it feels so multifaceted and complex. And it is, in a way. But actually, these practical steps are simple. You know, connect it to people, connect it to your business. And then that third step is making it tangible. So making sure that the culture strategy is really clear, simple, succinct, something you can explain in a sentence. Maybe you've got kind of three strategic pillars under it, but you want to make sure you explain it to people and they get it and they remember it. And it's front of mind on a daily basis for them.
Yeah.
Writing a culture strategy that's 30 pages long, you can forget because people won't remember it and they won't believe in it and buy into it.
Yeah.
And I guess the final thing there is just embracing the fact that culture is a living thing by its very definition. You're never done building a culture, making sure that you're doing these steps. So listen to your people, connect it to your strategy, make it tangible. You're doing that constant listening, constant learning, constant evolving and tweaking. Because, you know, if we look at, I don't want to harp back to it, but if we look at the pandemic, for example, you know, and then coming out of that, you need very different strategies to support people.
Yeah.
A lot can change in just a few months. So you need to keep listening and embracing the evolution as it comes.
Yeah. And I guess I was almost imagining, like, how do you bring people who were originally in the business, like those original team members who had a different idea of culture in the beginning, and, you know, now that journey is changing and they need to come along as their company evolves and maybe the requirements change, do you think it's organic, or do you think you have to put in steps to protect those original people and bring them along?
I think that this is such an interesting question. And from my perspective, those original team members, they do have such an important and exciting role in the evolution of your company. And I think if you approach it well and handle it well with them, they can be some of the most powerful ambassadors for your business and for your culture. And they can actually help you bring others on the journey of evolution and help kind of, you know, induct newer people in how you are, what your history has been, what your evolution is. But if it's also not handled well, then they can easily think, and this does happen, people will think, oh, this isn't what I've signed up for. Yeah. You know, I've signed up for that kind of startup culture, and now you're scale up and the team's quadrupled in size, and I'm starting to feel like a cog in the machine rather than
process. Yeah. Now it's more process driven than it is people driven or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. So to start with the, you know, I guess a pragmatic one is just accepting that, you know, not everybody will stay all the time. You can't make everyone happy all the time. And as you are evolving as a business, you may need different people with different skill sets, different attitudes, different aspirations as your company's evolving. Yeah. But I am and always will be a firm believer that, you know, wherever you can, bringing every colleague and early colleagues, especially on that journey with you, is so important. Stan's been around for 13 years. As I mentioned, I've been here for 8 of those years. Yeah. So I joined when we were very young. I had a completely different role then. So I've seen a lot of evolution. And I guess to talk from my own personal perspective, what I've found to be really effective is explaining the evolution in advance, not as it's happening. So giving people a heads up, saying, you know, these are our ambitions for the next 12 months, these are our ambitions for the next 2 years, this is where we want to be. Yeah. And let them feel part of it. Ask for their thoughts and ideas ahead of time. Ask if anything's not clear. Ask what they need to make it a reality for them. Yeah. What they need to feel excited by it. What clarifications do they need?
Yeah. And also making flexibility.
And making it clear what role they play in this evolution as well, so it's not just happening to them, but, you know, there's a real opportunity for you here. Again, mapping it back onto what gets that person out of bed in the morning. So if they, you know, love managing people, can you look at giving them more management responsibilities or a chance to head up a division? Mm-hmm. It should be something that's really exciting for them rather than daunting. And also don't take them for granted. There is no such thing as unconditional loyalty when it comes to employment. You know, if you're sat there thinking, oh, they've been here for 5 years, they'll, you know, they're embedded now, they're part of the furniture, they're not going anywhere. Yeah, that's not real. So making sure that you aren't taking for granted, giving them opportunities, ensure that their career is evolving as your business is evolving.
Yeah, and keeping them engaged, as in, you know, how do they feel now versus how they felt X amounts of months or years ago, or, you know, are they still with you? Are they, you know, just those check-ins, those little,
exactly,
how are you doing?
Exactly. Yeah. I guess to use a bit of a out of sector analogy, you know, you see it all the time. Banks are giving amazing deals to new customers, or like phone companies are doing the same, and their customers who have been loyal and stood the test of time, they're getting the worst deals. So if you apply that to the workplace, it makes absolutely no sense. So if you find yourself falling into that model, acknowledge it and address it as soon as you can.
Yeah, we've definitely seen it in some agency mergers where, you know, the newest, as the new people come on board, they've got all the benefits and the other people are like, wait, what's happened? Like, we've been here the longest and we can't access those. It's strange.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very different. Okay, so that's really lovely. I think that's a really great way to sort of set the scene of how to start, how to think about this kind of big culture piece. How do you think that you create those internal advocates, people who live and breathe the values? I know you kind of touched on some of it, but, you know, is there a natural outcome or is it a strategic process? Like, how do they do it?
Yeah, it's for some, it can be natural. For others, it is more of a strategic and deliberate process. So I think if you're lucky enough to have colleagues who really kind of already kind of are advocates, they love coming to work, they're really bought into the values, they lead by example with them, really like embrace that and use them and give them the opportunity to, yeah, really be that ambassador and help instill those values in other people. And you can give that as one of their development objectives, even like make it a formal part of their role. For others, they may need more tangible prompts to buy into the values. You know, values are not something that should just be stuck on the wall. They should be lived and breathed. So I think the key thing here when you're thinking about those internal advocates is making sure the values reflect everyone's lived reality at work. Okay. So to use us as an example, we evolved our values a few years ago with our entire team. We did a workshop looking at what was then our current values, what still felt true to us, what felt missing. And then we developed four values together. We added one a year ago, which was around having brave conversations with ourselves and with our clients. And then also lots of listening. So we do kind of one-to-one culture catch-ups every 6 months. I co-lead with another of my culture team. And we ask people which of our values we're collectively best at and where we could improve. We analyze that data and we share that with people, and we have an open conversation saying, okay, we're really good at bringing out the best in our people, but maybe we're less good at in having these brave conversations, for example. Yeah. And then we kind of come up with an action plan to address that. So we're constantly talking about them. We do training workshops specifically in our values, led by kind of everyone from our founder to account executives.
Yeah.
And we also do weekly shout outs where we come together as a whole team and kind of celebrate and recognize the great work that people have been doing. And again, that is mapped onto our values. So in that sense, trying to find ways to bring the values into the day-to-day, week-to-week life, you are naturally creating those internal advocates rather than asking someone to be one.
Yeah, almost like even with a strategic process, it's forcing it to become organic. It becomes like, because the process is there, it allows it to feel natural because there are multiple check-in points. There's multiple ways that people can come and present themselves or to get involved, or they're not going to want to join every club. They're not going to want to, you know, they're not going to love every event that you throw, but everyone wants to get involved in some way because they want to bring something to the table just to show up because it's becoming part of their culture. So I think it's lovely.
Yeah, and absolutely. Yeah. And to your point around kind of making sure everyone can bring something to the table, it's also, you know, being open to people's ideas around, you know, how can we live our values? You know, it's fine putting some steps and some processes in place, but asking them as well, like, you know, what can we do to be more ambitious in our day-to-day work? Like, we want to hear from you because you're on the ground. We're asking you to be ambitious. What does that look like and what does that mean to you? Yeah. So yeah, to your point, listening to their ideas and them bringing solutions to the table that can then be implemented, and then that's something they become really proud of.
Yeah,
and they're like, I've done this tangible thing that we now are running with as a business, linking to our values. So, you know, by default, they are so embedded in that, and they will become an advocate.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so you know, Stand works with a lot of purpose-led clients. How do you think that alignment of influence of who you hire and how you lead fits into that? You know, yeah, I guess part of that value piece.
Yeah, really good question. That kind of purpose-led thing is so important to us. We work with purpose-led clients because that matches our values. We are very purpose-led. You know, we're existing to build belief in brands that are genuinely trying to do something better than what already exists. So we're all about positive change. There's really, like, purpose is so intrinsic to what we do. So when it comes to hiring, one of our approaches there is that our belief that you can teach aptitude, but you can't teach attitude. That's much harder to teach. So we hire on people's attitudes and ambitions as much as their aptitude and skill sets. Really looking for people who are hungry to make a difference, want to get stuck into complex issues and find solutions. And alongside that, we always have a chat about our values in interview settings, what sort of culture they would thrive in, to ensure it's a good fit from both sides. And I guess a piece of advice there is, remember that they're interviewing you as much as you're interviewing them. It's a two-way street. I think that values piece and kind of the type of ambition you're looking to hire is so important and so critical for us.
Yeah, you want someone to come to the table to bring some skills, but also to bring that thing that they're like, I love, you know, making a difference. That's what I want to do. I want to do it for your clients. I've got all of these ideas, and you can see the spark and you think, how can I harness that as part of our business and, you know, make our clients happier because of it?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, if we were to ever interview someone that had, you know, the most impressive CV, like incredibly relevant experience, but they didn't have that drive and they just wanted to, you know, come to work and, you know, tick the boxes and, you know, go home at the end of the day, it actually wouldn't be fair to us to offer them the role, because that's not how we work. And, you know, we expect different things from our people. So really just having clarity when you are hiring as to what you're looking for, not just skill set, I think is so important. And then to your point around kind of how that influences how we lead, I've mentioned a few times we're very values driven. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned that we, you know, the semantics that we use, talk about people as colleagues, not employees. Yeah. We take a very kind of non-hierarchical approach. Like, every idea is welcome. We want everyone to put ideas forward. Everyone learns from everyone. So everybody at Stand, no matter their level, does training sessions for the rest of the company. Really making sure everyone feels a crucial part of the team and has an active role to play in shaping our culture. So, you know, we spoke earlier around, you know, people bringing ideas to the table and turning them into reality. Mm-hmm. I would say the majority of our cultural initiatives we have, from our sabbatical to our wellbeing bounty, they have come from ideas from the team. They've brought to us and said, we should be doing something like this, or we should shake up how we're looking at this. And we make that happen. And that's something that I think we're really proud of, that actually the program hasn't come from me. It's come from the team, and that's how it should
be. Yeah, it's come from internal, like, as in at any level. And it's kind of sometimes that feeling of a flat structure, that you're not scared to come forward with an idea, because you could talk to an MD or you could talk to the person who's at the same level next to you, and you won't be made to feel like your opinion doesn't matter. So that's lovely. Okay, so let's take a look at some of that reality of being in an employer brand. You know, what role does employer branding play in acting the, you know, like the right marketing talent? As in, how can we encourage those people to get involved? As in,
So I think attracting top talent is obviously a key priority for business success. Competition is tough at the moment. Mm-hmm. If we look at the market, we've got tough competition. We've also got really high brand scrutiny and low employee loyalty. Again, that is something that's stood the test of time since the pandemic, especially in that kind of, you know, near the end of the pandemic, wild time where it was the most candidate-driven market I think we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, people being poached left, right and centre. Everyone was moving jobs.
Jumping ship.
Being able to attract top talent is such a huge part, and the employer branding there is so key. I think it's really important to remember that attracting talent isn't just about the job spec. Mm-hmm. It's so much more than that. It's about, you know, the vision and the culture and how you're storytelling that to prospects, and the stories that they're hearing about the brand. They are so, so important, because again, it's, you know, it's where you spend an alarming amount of your time as an adult, and people need to know they're making the right decision. You know, every time you change jobs, it's a leap of faith, so you need to give them as much grounding and confidence as possible that it is the right decision for them, and that there's going to be opportunities that excite them and fulfill them. So that employer branding piece, like, the importance of it really cannot be overstated.
They want to see an opportunity for growth, like somewhere that they're going to be able to be. And I think a lot of people do want longevity, unless you're a freelancer and that's what your purpose is. Most people want to go somewhere and they want to stay loyal. So if you can give them the opportunity to do that by showing them ahead of an interview what it might be like, whether that's stories on your website or social media or some videos of you guys doing some things together that are just silly and fun, those things are really helpful. So
absolutely. And I think it's a sad reality that we have at the moment, where, you know, the market has shifted a lot, and I think there's probably a lot of people that are so focused on job security, so mm-hmm. they are worried to leave their current employment. You know, they might not, doesn't mean they're happy at work. Like, let's not confuse, you know, high retention with employee happiness. Hopefully that's the case for lots of places, but just because they're staying doesn't mean they're happy. It might mean they're scared to move. So again, you really need to paint that picture of, you know, opportunity, security, and the culture as well. And to that point, the internal brand and reality of that really has to match the external brand and how you're portraying that. Because the risk is that, you know, if you're putting out a great, you know, flashy, exciting, creative sounding employer brand, but it's not matching the reality. If you're saying all the right things, but they're not real, all you're achieving there is a revolving door of colleagues. if you're able to attract the right talent but not retain them, they're going to walk out of that door and they're not going to come back.
And they're going to go tell two of their friends, oh, don't go there because this is why it's not a great place to work. And I think that word of mouth does carry, especially when people come from similar industries and they're all mingling. So it's not unknown.
Absolutely. It's a small world. People talk.
Yeah.
And that's thing. If you're nailing your employer brand, mm-hmm. knowing that it's a small world and people talk should be something where you're like, brilliant. That works in our favor because people will talk about what a fantastic place to work we are. Yeah. If that reality scares you, mm-hmm. it's time to look
it's
at your
question. Yeah, it's a question mark.
Well, you're done, which again is very natural.
Okay, good. And I mean, do you think you've encountered any kind of examples of where bad reputation has damaged hiring efforts in some way? I mean, you may not know and you may not be able to tell me, but maybe you have some examples.
Yeah, I thought I'd go out of sector for this one. Keep it safe. Sure. It's a bit of an old one, but it's stuck with me because it's such a stark example that I think is quite an extreme one, but it's effective. So Uber, this was around 2017 time. They had a number of damaging incidents coming to life, you know, allegations of sexual harassment, aggressive leadership, generally toxic culture. And obviously there was lots of public backlash when this came out and lots of backlash from their colleagues as well. So as a result, it became very hard for them to hire talent, mm-hmm. especially minority groups in tech, including women. They also struggled with retention across, you know, all of their colleague base as well. Several, you know, top execs resigned. And as a result of that, they had to invest a lot of money, time, effort and introspection into their external employer brand and, you know, I would say updating, but I'm reforming their internal reality and culture to rebuild that trust. But also with that, you know, yeah, they've done that and they've, you know, done the hard work. But people do have long memories and it can be hard to forget stuff like that. You know, when I was thinking about this question, that sprang to mind immediately. And that's, you know, almost 10 years ago now. So I think it can be extremely damaging. And the best advice is to not let it get there. If there's any whisper of, you know, cultural misalignment internally, the easiest time to address it is when you hear those whispers of discontentment. If you leave it to simmer and hope it will blow over, it's not going to do that. That's not real.
And everyone's time poor. Everyone doesn't really have those things, but it's that longer look at if it isn't addressed at the time when it's happening and you aren't asking or questioning it so that you can listen, it's the starting point. Like, as in, you don't want the little whispers to become those things that become the glass door reviews on your website or the, you know, the disgruntled people that are kind of writing on sub forums of stuff. You want to address it as soon as possible. So it's a great example. Thank you. And I mean, how do you think, I think probably maybe in this example you sort of already said, but like, how do you mitigate or recover from that internal or external alignment? Is it just that, you know, you started at any point? Where do you think it is?
Yeah. So I think, in terms of mitigating, mm-hmm. as soon as you see any whisper of misalignment, you address it there and then. Again, it's much easier to do it in the moment rather than let it fester. So doing the work early on, really taking the time to interrogate and understand how you are perceived as a business, but as an employer, both internally and externally as well. Listen to your current colleagues, reread exit interview transcripts. You know, what can we learn from that? What can we really take? And also ensuring that your marketing, culture, HR, recruitment teams are all communicating. So the people that are looking after your internal culture, the people that are looking after your external brand, they need to be aligned to make sure you're communicating consistently and clearly across your entirety. Mm-hmm. You can't look at external comms and internal comms separately. That doesn't fly anymore.
No.
But also knowing that, as to your point, you know, people will do their homework. So you should mm-hmm. be doing your homework too. So looking at Glassdoor, and mm-hmm. You know, what's being written about you in industry magazines, what's being written about you on social media, making sure you're really keeping your finger on the pulse. And as soon as, again, you're spotting any trends, you're dealing with them there and then. in terms of recovering from it, transparency and honesty, I think, are really critical. This is the point at which, you know, your brand personality needs to feel human, not corporate. You need to, you know, I would always recommend, you know, holding your hands up and saying, yeah, this isn't good enough. We agree with you. And this is what we're doing about it. Trying to sort of, you know, put a plaster over it or defend, you know, deplorable behavior is never going to work.
People respect, if you take the ownership of it and kind of just say, do you know what, like you said, hands up, we've made a mistake here, we've dropped the ball, but we're not going to just pretend it doesn't exist, we're going to try now.
Exactly that point, you know, we are real human, and if you connect with this issue on a human level, because it's a human issue at the end of the day, if it's a cultural, you know, tension or issue, you can't go in with a corporate narrative. So yeah, that honesty and then focusing on what you've already done as a result of it and what you're doing and what you've committed to doing in the future. And then again, reiterating your strategy and your vision and ensuring that your efforts both internally and externally are really mapped onto that. Because, you know, if you've nailed your strategy and vision, etc., and there's cultural misalignment, then something's gone wrong because your culture isn't supporting your strategy and vision. So actually, if there are issues and you're true to your strategy and vision and they are right, it should be straightforward to understand what needs to change in your culture. So just acknowledge and embrace the fact that you've got that work to do. Don't put it off, because culture is so critical.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I was kind of thinking of how we're looking ahead for, you know, the end of 2025 and 26 and that kind of hiring landscape. And I was going to say, like, what challenges or themes are you seeing in employee branding? But I kind of feel like we've been touching on them the whole way through, which is that there is this disconnect within businesses since the pandemic. We all have new requirements. We all feel a little bit different about what we want from our workplace. And maybe we're also coming in from a place of fear, which is don't leave, stay, but maybe it doesn't align. So, you know, I don't know if you have any other examples of challenges that you think are coming up or that they might be facing.
Yeah, I think we have covered a lot of them. I guess the only other thing that has constantly been on my mind is that tension between trust and control. And again, this is something that came out of the pandemic, when suddenly we could work from home the entire time. And then people were like, why am I spending 3 hours a day commuting? That doesn't make any sense. Glass shattered. And I think it's been fascinating to see the way in which employers have handled that transition to, you know, post-pandemic lifestyle. Some people saying, actually, we're just going to go fully hybrid because it works well. People are getting their job done. Some people have, you know, doing a hybrid model where you're in the office a few days. And then we've got the likes of, you know, Google and Amazon, who are forcing people to come back, you know, pretty much full time to the office. And there was huge backlash against that. So I think what employers really need to look at is, again, it's this piece around people have lives outside of work. And if you're asking them to come in 5 days, you might be asking them to spend, you know, 15 hours of their week commuting, which is basically 2 working days worth. Are they going to want to do that? Some may, and that's great. But when you're really looking at the talent you're trying to attract and the skills and the attitudes that you need in your team, is them being in the office 5 days a week really more important than getting the right person?
Yeah.
It's just these things that people that really is. Need to navigate. There's not one answer for everybody, but you need to find the right answer for yourselves.
Yeah. And I think that being able to understand whether or not it is you're trying to take control of something, maybe do it as a test run and don't say, we're going to change it for the next year. Maybe just say, we're going to trial this for 3 months just to see if we see a difference. I don't know. Something like that might be a better way to try it.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. That kind of test and learn approach, I think works really well. And also that creates a sense of, you know, this is a collective effort. We all need to make this a success. And if it doesn't work, then we'll look at something else. But that incentivizes people to make it work and make it successful, if it's something they want to do, obviously.
Yeah, equally. I mean, yeah, if someone could see the value of it, I'm sure they would try. You know, I think, again, we're looking at what should hiring managers be doing differently to attract and attain that top talent between the next year, coming forward.
Yeah, so, you know, as we've mentioned, the market has changed a lot when it comes to attracting talent. So you really need to be painting a tangible picture of life there not just the job spec, but, you know, going beyond that, what's it like to be part of the team? What is the physical environment? Like, all of these things that make up part of that working reality, paint a picture of all of them. And I think what's worked really effectively that I've seen before is job ads that aren't just a list of what we need from you, what we expect, our requirements, but, you know, what's in it for them as well. And you can even be that tangible with the job spec, you know, a section of, you know, what we're looking for, a section of what's in it for you. Because again, it's a two-way street, and that's everything from not just, you know, here's your work perks, but like, you know, you've got opportunity for growth. You're going to have really kind of hands-on support. That's sort of like the less tangible stuff, but really important stuff for people's fulfillment and progression. Yeah. What we found also works really well is offering chats with other people on the team who aren't in the formal hiring process. You know, if someone, you know, say if we were hiring an account manager and they were like, oh, I'd love to get a more hands-on understanding of the role, we'd be like, oh, have a chat to, you know, one of our account managers. Like, they'll have a like coffee with you or jump on the phone for 20 minutes and just let you know what that's like. Inviting them into your space as well. You know, if you are hybrid, for example, bringing them in for interview wherever you can rather than doing it over a screen. Again, it just shows that you're welcoming them, you know, into your team, into your space. You know, it kind of shows we've got nothing to hide. We want you to be part of this. We're not just putting on a front.
That's a great idea. And I particularly like your office. I like the space. I've been there before. It's really lovely. I was like, oh, this would be a really nice place to work. It's just, good open, and there's lots of places to interact with other people too. So it's good.
Yeah, no, it helps to have somewhere nice. And again, we made a very conscious decision with that. You know, we do, it's hybrid. We do ask people to come in a few days a week. But we were like, well, we need somewhere nice for them to come in, somewhere that they're going to want to be in and that incentivizes them to come in and connect with their colleagues. I think as well, to the point around kind of individual purpose and fulfillment, it's really shouting about the impacts of your work as well. Yeah. Not just what you do, but what it achieves. You know, through our work with clients, we've had laws change. We've had government pledge funding for really underserved sectors. If we can talk about that kind of stuff and people are like, oh, wow, that's, I want to be part of that. Yeah. Rather than, you know, we sell in press releases. that's not as inspiring. Let's be clear. Really painting the picture of the change and the impact that they can be a part of, I think, is a really powerful pull.
Good. I mean, I think we've covered this in so many different ways, but I guess I was trying to think, like, what other advice can we give to people who are listening to this, you know, other brands that are trying this? You know, is there any practical advice for leaders who know that change is needed, but they don't know how to begin it? I know you're probably going to say, start with listening, but like, you know, what is it? Is it like, is it a survey? Is it something like they have to, how do they even begin to think about this as a bigger problem?
Yeah, really, really good question. I think actually just knowing that change is needed is almost the hardest step to take. Yeah. So, you know, that acknowledgement and, you know, taking the time to introspect and really realize that something needs to be different isn't easy. That's hard work. So I would say to anyone who's in that position and they're listening, you've done some of the hardest work on this already. In terms of the advice and next steps, yes, I am going to say listening. But it's really focusing on the facts at hand. You know, what are your people saying? How are people feeling? What's changed? What's gone wrong? I would say, you know, again, depending on the size of organization you are, I would generally say in this instance, a survey is a good place to start. You can get a temp check across, you know, the whole organization, and it really helps you start to diagnose issues. And then once you've found a theme from the surveys, you can then go more in depth with like one-to-one conversations or like a little focus group at a certain level if they're comfortable sharing in that space. But I think going broad brush, identifying the themes, and then you can go deeper and have those more kind of in-depth qualitative conversations. I think as well, you know, the teams who are kind of, you know, whether it's leaders or HR teams or, you know, people and culture teams, doing this work can be one of the loneliest roles actually in a company, especially when, you know, when there are, you know, they know change is needed and there are kind of cultural challenges. It can be a very lonely job and quite a draining job. Especially if all you're hearing is the negative
stuff. I was just thinking that, yeah, you're just getting everyone telling you what they don't like, not all the things that they enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess look after yourself is some advice there. But also, you know, chat to people outside of your organization. Like I could talk about culture all day. I think that's probably come through loud and clear. I'm always happy to talk to people who are struggling with culture or know something needs to be better. You know, talking to someone who's impartial and not in the weeds of your challenges, because, you know, if you're a leader trying to tackle this, you are one of those colleagues too. You know, it's happening to you as well. And also we can come in and, you know, look at the issue and say things that might feel quite uncomfortable for someone internally to say. You know, we can share those harsh truths. We can, you know, be the bad guy to be the good guy if we need to be. So yeah, don't feel like it has to be solved internally, because sometimes that external lens is really helpful and refreshing.
Yeah, I think even just networking with other people is probably quite helpful to get other people's opinions on how they did it is a start, right?
Absolutely.
Good. Well, I want to say thank you so much for coming to talk to us about this topic today. I think it's you as a team are showing how you're leading by example in it, and it's just lovely to see. You know, you're living and breathing it not only as an organization, but for your clients as well. You're helping them do that within their businesses too. So, yeah, thank you so much. Maybe you just want to give us your final bit of advice, if there's anything else Dev should be thinking about. Otherwise, just tell everyone how they can get to know you, the business, or reach out to you in any way.
Brilliant. Yeah, so I guess my three final takeaways. The first one, listen to your people. And embrace that culture is alive and will evolve over time. Embrace that journey and roll with it. And I guess the third piece is, you're not alone in this if you're struggling. Reach out to people, talk about it, connect. The amount of solutions you find from talking to people, the amount of reassurance you find that, you know, you're not the only ones going through this, can be really, really powerful. In terms of how you can connect, I'm on LinkedIn, Grace French. Stan's website is thisisstan.com, and you can also find us on Instagram at stansnaps.
Great. So that's really lovely. Thank you again for joining us. And just to remind all the listeners, definitely follow Stopgap Talks for future episodes, because we like to talk about all of these things from a marketing and a recruitment background. So yeah, I hope you have a good day.
Thanks so much for having me, Amanda.
Thanks.